call is now being recorded.
So this is Mike Godfather, Mike Luton, astrologer for Huffington Post right now, right, Michael?
Whatever you want.
And your own.
However you wish.
Well, also you're on MichaelLuton.com.
Correct.
And you've been an astrologer for many years.
A long time. A long, 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 long time.
Yep, I have.
Go ahead.
And so, I don't know if that makes you an expert on aliens.
No, it doesn't. Because nobody is an expert on aliens. I have read David Jacobs, John Mack. I've had a long conversations with Bud Hopkins.
These are other people. Writers?
Anybody who knows or is interested in this phenomenon knows those three names, of course. And I'm reluctant to talk about these things too much in the public. I don't really do that because I am in the public, so it's kind of tricky for me to talk about these things. Nobody really knows what this is all about. There are a lot of theories about whether it's real, whether it's a government disinformation project, whether Roswell ever happened, whether these are beings from the future coming back to warn us because they have become sterile after all of the radiation and pollution we've done, or whether they're indeed people who have somehow been able to bridge the distances between stars, which is the same as coming back from the future, because that's what space travel would be. So nobody really knows exactly what this is. But if you're asking me, what are you asking me about that?
Really, I'm just bringing up the word aliens and letting you free associate.
Well, that could be people coming from Mexico. So, you know, they're not aliens, but some people think they are.
No, not. That's the difference. Not that definition.
No, but I mean, you know, the alien, by definition, alien means étranger, it means foreign. And so we've come to see, people as aliens when, in fact, we were the aliens, the white people were the aliens in the New World in the 15th and 16th century. So,
right.
I guess you're talking about what the common term would be as extraterrestrial, is that right?
But I think it's also not unimportant that, you know, probably the question of do you think the same way about extraterrestrials as you do about people from, you know, is it from other countries? Is it the same? I don't know. That's not out of the...
Okay, so you're asking me, do I think the same thing about extraterrestrials as some of these other researchers?
Or you could just say what the basically different thoughts are about the different researchers. I mean, you did.
Well, David Jacobs, John Mack, when he started, he was from Harvard, and when he started investigating it, I think it might have been around the time that Whitley Strieber wrote Communion. But he was very much against the phenomenon, and he said, you know, why would anybody come and disturb you in your bed? And, and why would people be taken? And is this a real phenomenon? And he thought it was a real phenomenon because he was a psychiatrist. And he examined these people thoroughly. I mean, some of the researchers believe that Leo Sprinkle, who was another psychiatrist, used to put people under hypnosis. And some people think he led them into these false memories. But he certainly didn't think that he did that. But John Mack was very much against it. After he researched it for a while, however, he began to believe that it was a spiritual event, that whoever was visiting us had our good intentions in mind. David Jacobs, I forget the name of his book, Secret Life, I think. But David Jacobs is from Temple University, I believe, in Pennsylvania. He was also a psychiatrist. He, after his studies of the subjects, of the people who claim that they've been abducted, he felt that there was really, it was quite malignant. He felt that they were all being violated sexually probably for the reasons of fertility experiments or trying to create hybrids. He was of that belief, I believe. Bud Hopkins, who was probably the most well-known researcher in the whole world, maybe, studied this for years. He studied the Travis Walton case, and he studied many, many cases. The Travis Walton case was a case in which a bunch of loggers went up into the mountains. I want to say it's Oregon or Washington out there. And maybe there were five of them, and four came back, and they claimed that the one who did not return was taken by a UFO. And the police at the time believed that they killed him and were making up a story. So they were held and investigated. And several days later, Travis Walton showed up.
Just, you know, it seems like the worst excuse ever if they were really to have killed somebody.
It's perfect. It's perfect.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's a perfect excuse because, you know, you can't prove it. But several days later, Travis Walton showed up naked in town, screaming hysterically that he'd been taken by aliens. And
wow.
His story, which is Fire in the Sky, is, I believe, his book, which was made a movie which was very embellished. It didn't
right.
really happen that way. But he was one case that was studied by Bud Hopkins. And the other was incidents at Copley Woods, which interested me personally, especially because as he began to uncover one person's investigation of an abduction, he found out the whole family was involved. The mother, the children, the husband, everybody had a story. And I found that, particularly on a personal basis, very interesting because of some things that happened to my family. So, but I never really found out whether he thought they were from another planet. Now, of course, The Interrupted Journey, Betty and Barney Hill, was the most famous. And really, after Roswell in 47, was it? 49? After Roswell in the 40s, the Betty and Barney Hill incident was the biggest news. In 1961, when they were a middle-aged couple, and they claimed they'd been abducted under hypnosis, and they stuck to their story till the day they died. And there were certain elements of their story that didn't make sense at the time, but 20 years later, when science and astronomers had discovered another cluster of stars that were unable to be seen without radio astronomy, her description would turn out to be correct. So there are all kinds of questions that we cannot understand, and certainly people are not making this up when you see so many people grouped together on a beach seeing these things. Something is happening. Something is happening. Whether they're from future, another planet, I don't know. But something is very much happening. And many, many people who are credible have become involved in this. There's a lot of crazy disinformation about it. Crop circles are very mysterious. There's no way they could be a hoax. I don't know what kind of communication that is in crop circles. It is something that needs to be further investigated. And there was a book. You probably know this book. Is it Childhood's End?
Yeah,
there's
a
book where,
I read that.
Didn't the aliens appear in the sky as the ships appeared all over the world, and for 50 years they never moved? They didn't show anything else. That's what I seem to remember.
I only remember one thing from the story, really. But that sounds familiar. The only thing I remember is how the aliens looked like our image of the devil.
The devil, right. Yeah, I remember that too at the end. I remember that too. But there have been many, many, many accounts from very, very credible people who do not want their stories told publicly for the obvious reasons, because it sounds kooky and people lose credibility. As sad as it is, people lose credibility just because they describe this thing that happened to them. And therefore, they don't want it. They do not want to have it publicly discussed. And I mean, I have certain events that happened to me in my life and things that happened to my family that could never be explained as people, you know, people are just crazy or they're making it up. I've had these things happen in my entire family, and that's what got me interested in the first place. So,
so you something happened in your family that caused you to be interested in the subject of aliens?
Yes. Yes.
And I guess we will have to just leave that to the imagination, which is fine.
Well, I mean, I'm reluctant to talk about it just for the reasons I said, because it sounds so crazy, and it just sounds kooky. But I had a very intense series of experiences from the time I was a young person that I never knew what it was about, and then I had one very overt experience when I was young and living in Paris, and I psychotherapy for it to see, well, am I nuts? And I've been hypnotized, and I've had stories come out, and you still don't know, because for whatever reasons, whether it's going to ruin the timeline or some damn thing, whatever the reasons,
the Facebook timeline,
of course. You know, they say, well, if they came out and if they're from the future and they revealed themselves, it would ruin the space-time continuum or some damn thing. But I don't know if any of that's true. I just know something is really happening. I know it because I believe the accounts of credible people who have no reason or reason to gain anything from it,
yeah,
who have had experience, they have no reason to say, and in fact, it harms people's reputation most of the time. And so I have no reason. So they're credible because they have no reason to make it up. In fact, most of the people are reluctant to talk about it even today. The experiences I've had, which are very overt, I think. In fact, we saw a UFO with a night, George and I, when we were in Gloucester, when you were a little tyke. You were only about 3. And I put you to bed, and George and I went out in the front lawn, and we sort of were watching the stars, and we sort of laid on the hood of one of our cars so we could just recline and see the stars. And sure enough, we saw something, and we saw something move in diagonal shapes and in diagonal directions. It was certainly could have not been any, it couldn't have been any kind of flying thing. It was very far from where we were. It looked like about the size of a dime, but very far away, made no noise. And we watched it travel across the heavens. And it wasn't a satellite because it was a clear circular object. And we watched that for about 40 minutes. And then we went in the house because we had the fireplace going and you were asleep, so I didn't want to leave the house without you. We were sleeping.
Wow.
So, yeah. And George and I saw that together. And then suddenly it shot away. That was one thing that we saw. We never understood. We never explained it. But it was very clear. We watched it for about 40 minutes. Whether anything else happened to us during that time that we don't know, I couldn't tell you. It seems to me not. It seems to me we were just talking and watching it. But a lot of people have experiences where they think that's all they did. My accountant, who's just a little guy from Long Island, Saul Eisenberg, who just recently passed away, he was the most down-to-earth person. He was my accountant. And one day, when he was doing my taxes, we went out to have lunch after we finished during the break we had. And so matter-of-factly, this little accountant said, oh, yeah, we saw a UFO when I first married May, my wife. And we first moved out to Long Island. There was nobody else in the neighborhood. There were just a couple of houses and lots of fields. Of course, it's now built up. And he said, she was cooking dinner, and I was in the dining room, and I said, May, come here, look at this. And she came out. We saw a UFO hovering in the field, you know, in the field next to our place. And it lowered and lowered and lowered, and then it suddenly took off and went away. Now, they never told anybody. I guess they told their kids, but they never said it publicly. But he said it to me very matter-of-factly. There was no reason for him to make that up. I believe he saw something. And believe a lot of people who report the sightings like that under hypnosis, they have a lot more to tell than just it landed in the field, it took off. Many times under hypnosis, other things are revealed. I cannot say what this is all about. But I know it's extremely real.
Well, what do you say about there being some, you know, how come some people seem more open to this than others? Like,
hey, man, I'm an astrologer. I have the same problem with astrology. Some people are interested to investigate it. And once they investigate it, they see a lot of value in it. And some people say, that's ridiculous. It has nothing to do with planets and skies, have nothing to do with people.
Do you think there's some correlation between people who, like, the same people believe are open to both? Or is it, like, different people?
I don't know if it's different people. I don't think it's a group. You know, there are people who, because astrology is not for everybody, there are people who are very self-determining people who would rather keep their feet on the ground and not look outside for answers or for a description of their own behavior. But those same people could be very open to the possibility of life on other planets and vice versa. I don't think one has anything to do with the other, because mainly because in my own community, my own astrology community, I very rarely discuss this because most of the people in my community are not into it. I have one friend not into UFOs. A lot of people in my astrology community are not interested in UFOs. They're probably interested or open to hearing about it, but they're not real buffs. I have one colleague who had a very heavy series of experiences with her mother about UFOs when she was a teenager. She discusses it with absolutely no one. She had a big experience, but these things are really very private, and that's what Bud Hopkins said too. You know, when I spoke with him about it, he said that a lot of these things are just not to be discussed because people are just too scared or reluctant to have their credibility questioned or, you know, impugned because of what it entails. But something is really happening. I mean, there's anybody who's open to any sort of anything has to see that this is a phenomenon. My sister, who's very, very interested, one of the things that we find in the research, is that people who are obsessed with science fiction, who have to watch Star Trek, people who are obsessed with science fiction, really obsessed with it, often have some experience in their background about this stuff. Not all the time, but often. My sister, who had a very real intense experience, before any UFO stuff was even popular, my sister's experience... Are we what? Are you okay?
Yeah, no, I was just talking to somebody for a second. Thank you. Go ahead.
Oh. My sister, who's had a very, very, very real experience, and she didn't ever know what it was, because this was before UFO stuff was even popular. And she told our whole family, and I was interested. But many of the people in my family said, oh, come on, you know, you were dreaming, it didn't happen. But to this day, and it was many years later, she swears on a stack of Bibles that that happened to her. And she's been obsessed with science fiction, the Twilight Zone, anything she had to watch. She has never been able to not, you know, watch it. And she had one of those experiences. That's one of the things that when you read the UFO literature, they'll often say that people who are obsessed with this stuff have a reason to be.
Well, does it say whether they're obsessed with science fiction before or after their experience? Because if they were already obsessed with science fiction, that could...
Well, that I don't
explain.
Know. Yeah, that I don't... Okay. Maybe that's why they... That's, not, you know, skeptics would say, well, that's why they believe they've been visited, because they were always into this. So I don't know. Personally, to tell you, I don't know. I haven't done the research.
Right.
So I don't know if it's a cart before the horse. I just know that the people whom I know who have stories to tell are not making them up. And when you really read the literature of UFO stuff, these are like regular people. Betty and Barney Hill from the 60s, they were like so regular people. They were just psychologically, people are saying, well, they were an interracial couple in the early 60s. That didn't happen. You know, that was part of it, and maybe that's why they were obsessed with this, and they thought it was that, it was their way. But when you read their stories, they had no reason on earth to be public. They didn't want to be public.
So what do you think is... How come we can't get scientific, you know, corroboration of sightings? Or do you think that it's...
There are now. I mean, former Air Force pilots and former airline pilots, once they retire, they've come forward and said they've seen things. Of course they have. But where's the hard data? Where's the alien bodies? The people who believe absolutely, positively, no doubt about it, that that people have had these implants in their body and that they've been found and seen. Other scientists say that's not anything, that's not real, that's just invented. For some reason, you know something? It's a slow process, Nick, you know? When I was a kid, I remember I was in fifth grade. I remember reading an article, because I was interested in this from the beginning. And there was an article in some magazine. And the article was called, Is There Life on Other Worlds? Okay?
What was it?
Is There Life on Other Planets? I think something like that. And it was, you know, a serious, you know, family magazine, one of those things that were popular. And at the end of it, they said, probably not.
Right.
Okay? So what is happening now, you talk to young people today.
Yeah.
Young people take it completely for granted. It's not a question of do they believe. Young people today just completely take it for granted. They say, yeah, of course, you know, it's real.
Right.
And that's how the culture has changed. The culture changes gradually.
Uh-huh.
But we're so crass and we're so cynical that if Jesus came back now, he'd have to be on Dancing with the Stars, because we have a very crass and corrupted culture. So,
well, I mean,
I'm saying that there is such a commercialization of everything that if this should ever happen in any way, if they landed on the White House lawn, people would think it was fake.
Well, they thought Jesus wasn't real, too, you know.
What?
they didn't believe in Jesus when he came, or, you know, the historical Jesus. There's a relatively few
right.
people believed. But,
right.
Okay. But there is a question, I think, of belief versus proof, too. I mean, you have to use the word believe to describe what, you know, people, you know, think about,
well,
about aliens.
Let's go back to astrology for a minute. People say, do you believe in astrology? I don't believe in astrology at all. I investigated it and could not escape its eerie accuracy. I didn't just believe it's not a religion. And the same is true for UFOs. If people seriously investigate and follow the accounts of these credible professional people, they begin to see that something is really happening, although none of us really knows exactly what.
Well, yeah. So
I don't know what it is. Sometimes I think it's really travelers. And sometimes I got to take a drink of water. Hold on.
Okay.
Sometimes I think it's really travelers from another dimension. And when I read the accounts of how the people walk through walls and everything, and sometimes I think maybe it is people from the future because they're always worried about what we're doing now. And they're always talking to the subjects about, you know, things that are going to happen if we don't clean up the world. And that makes me think that they are, you know, very sterile human beings from the future. But maybe not. Maybe they are really aliens from, and you know, people from another world. And when you read the accounts, there are different types of aliens from different places. It's not just one group.
Well, yeah, I think that if you believe in an infinite universe, then you have to sort of think that there must be other life forms passing through all the time, and the only reason that we haven't seen them is because we can't see them.
Frank Drake, I don't know when he made this equation. It was a fantastic equation that has really stumped people for a long time. And back in the 60s, Carl Sagan, who hated astrology, by the way, Carl Sagan and Ivan Shklovsky, who was an astronomer at the time, wrote a book called Intelligent Life in the Universe. And that was the first time I'd ever seen the Frank Drake equation. Frank Drake, I forget whether he was NASA or he was a scientist from someplace. He postulated, let's start out by saying, is there one technically advanced civilization in the galaxy? And the answer, of course, is yes, it's us. He said, now, you multiply that number one against the number of stable stars in our galaxy that could be as old as ours. Multiply that by the number of possible stars that are old enough that have had planets. Multiply that by the number of planets that have evolved life on them. Multiply that by the number of planets that have life evolved long enough to become intelligent. Multiply that by the number of stars that have planets on which beings evolved enough to have a technical civilization. Based on that number one, connected to the number of stars that we know in our galaxy that are stable, and you have at the present moment between 60,000 and 1 million technical civilizations currently living in the galaxy.
Right. Well, I mean, that doesn't seem wrong. The only thing is, you know, I personally am very, I'm a believer in science, too. And it might be
interesting. Well, we can't, but we don't say we believe in science. We watch science and we see it's accurate. It's not a belief system.
No, but it almost is, because now people are, with climate change denial and everything, people are saying that you can prove whatever you want with studies. A lot of people say that. So
it depends on who's doing the study.
Right.
Monsanto says nothing's wrong with what they're doing.
Yeah, that just makes I experience rage when I think about that.
Well, that's life. Any study can prove anything. You can prove that lipstick doesn't hurt you, even if there's crap in it. You can say studies show no harm from lipstick hurting women.
So then, when I say I believe science, there is a way in which you either believe in it or you maybe not believe in it.
If you're a thinking person, you have to respect certain scientific discoveries.
Yeah.
It's amazing what astronomers can do in terms of looking into the universe and seeing the past and little particles and everything. It's fantastic that they're interested in that. That fascinates me. It disappoints me that they don't really have an interest in astrology that much.
Well, I think the way things go, it's like in science, it seems almost like everything that's possible will eventually be shown to be happening.
Mm-hmm. 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 I once did a talk on a cruise ship for scientists and astronomers from Sky and Telescope. And by the end of my talk, they were so interested in what I was doing, too. They said, you know, we should have a cruise sometime with astrologers and astronomers. They were tremendously open to my talking. That was fantastic in the South Atlantic. We did that. But
would have been a great place to see a UFO.
Yeah, you know, that might happen still. But it's just like, you know, science divorced astrology after it flourished in the Renaissance because of the, you know, Inquisition or whatever. But I don't seek people to get into astrology at all.
You're saying science divorced astrology because of the Inquisition?
I think that's when science divorced astrology. Until then, they were really married. Many of the scientists were astrologers, Kepler, Galileo, they were also astrologers. It was afterwards that it got divorced.
Well, maybe astrology should be another topic for cults at some point.
I don't know, I'm not that interested in, you know, people come to my work because they're interested in what I have to say. And I love it. I love having millions of readers. But I don't feel that I have to get people to read the stuff that I write if they're not interested in it. I really don't. I've had too much therapy.
Why don't you mention the name of your various ways that people can see your work online?
Well, my website is michaelluton.com, and there's, you know, that leads you all the other places. That's the best place. And, you know, I write columns in German and Japan, but for your listeners, they can just go on my site and look and see what I do. But, you know, our subject here is UFOs, which is a fascination that I cannot get rid of under any circumstances.
Do you still hold out the wish that you could, of course you could, right, that you could be, you know, definitively, you could have the fourth kind of encounter? Is it fourth kind?
you're asking me, do I still have to hold what wish?
To have a close encounter the fourth time.
You mean that would I have a wish to have a close encounter?
Yeah. The third kind is what? You just see it. The fourth kind is you actually get on the ship. Is that the difference?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. A fourth kind is, I think that's the fourth kind, I think. No, I guess it's just real contact. I don't know what the fourth kind is. So you're asking me if I have a wish to have a close encounter of the fourth kind?
Or third kind? Yeah, but I'm sure I know the answer is, of course you do. I don't really have to ask. Right?
Hear your question again before I answer it.
Do you still, if you ever did, have the desire, wish to have a meeting with them?
No comment.
Okay.
Based on my history.
Oh, because maybe, yeah, not everybody has a positive impression.
That's right.
Very interesting.
I mean, I'll tell you privately, but I wouldn't want to say anything about my own past because who knows? Nobody knows. Nobody can really say for sure at this time. You talk to these people who had, you know, close encounters, and they don't want to tell anybody. I've already said that. They don't want to tell anybody. They don't want to tell the police. They don't want to tell scientists. They don't want publicity. And all these groups of aliens, and then there's a thing that's called sleep paralysis. That's a psychological interpretation of people thinking that they've been awakened while they were asleep and had these experiences, but they were paralyzed to move. There is something called sleep paralysis. You know, that keeps people from, you know, walking in their sleep and jumping out the window.
Right. That's normal. Everybody has sleep paralysis.
Everybody has that.
Mm-hmm.
I think sleepwalkers have overcome or have a mechanism that doesn't work, and that's why they can sleepwalk.
And what does that have to do with this? You're saying that they're sleepwalkers is what they are?
No. There are some people who say that the account of alien encounter, being awakened in your bed, like Whitney Strieber's encounter, being awakened in your bed and being unable to move and being, you know, spoken to by these aliens or taken aboard or things done to you, that it really is a hallucination. And because of sleep paralysis, you think that you've been paralyzed while you're dreaming.
Well, this could be the most listened to episode of Cult Studs ever because of your standing online. Maybe people will all want to see what Michael Lutz says about this.
Where am I going to see this? I'm not going to write this on my website.
No, that's true.
I could write a book, though. I mean, I never thought about writing a book about it. I could. About my family's involvement. My sister was involved. My brother was involved. And my mother was involved. And I think my sister's kids were involved.
Your sister's kids?
I believe that my sister... I believe, yes, separately. I believe my sister's kids were involved, but I don't know for absolute sure. But I know my sister was involved, and my brother was involved separately. And my mother told us about things when we were kids. Something that happened to her.
Yeah, maybe you could write a book about not just your family, but, like, you know, the whole... Maybe there are other families who... There's something about certain families.
Well, that's what Bud Hopkins did in Incident in Copley Woods, which was very shocking. Because I think, if I remember correctly, one of the women kept having miscarriages. Spontaneous. that's how he started the investigation, I think. And then it turned out that everybody in the family had a story under hypnosis. There's one famous account that skeptics completely laugh at, but witnesses claim happened. It was this famous Brooklyn Bridge story about witnesses, and I think one of them worked for the State Department. And he was in a limousine going across Brooklyn Bridge or something. And many witnesses claim this happened. I can't tell you because I wasn't there. That they saw a UFO come over New York and a woman float out of a high-rise building into the UFO. And witnesses said they saw it.
I said, wow.
I forget the woman's name. I forget her name. Maybe Jane something? Or I forget. But a famous case that UFO buffs believe and skeptics say is ridiculous. Unless it's possible to play mind control games with people on a mass level and make whole people think that they saw something when they didn't.
Right.
I mean, what is it? The media today, well, makes you, when you listen, watch TV, the media creates a reality about society. It's a mass illusion that people feel is not happening, and yet they're hypnotized into believing it is. So there's only one step between actually being able to project things on the sky or someplace that people would believe is happening.
Well, it may be the same for the same effect on a person's beliefs, whether or not it's the same technology. It's different.
Right. If I want you to believe that the economy is good and it's on the upswing and jobs are plentiful, and you don't have a job, you feel even worse about yourself because everybody else seems to be getting better but you.
So it's maybe the analogy you're making is to people who have had experiences but are told that they're not possible.
Mm-hmm. And the opposite. That somehow technology is able to project something that makes people think it really happened. Nothing with technology would surprise me. I don't believe that because I believe that these things are really happening and that we're in a place of tremendous social evolution. I'm writing a book now called Humans Rising. It's taken me forever to write this book. But it's about what I think is happening to human beings. I believe there's a big evolutionary process going on. And no, we're not all going to walk into the sunset singing feelings and holding hands and singing We Are the World. People evolve at a different rate. Their consciousness expands at a different rate. So I totally don't believe that we're going to all evolve together, but I believe something major is happening. I mean, even in the field of astrology, okay, my field, never in the history of the human race, ever, before now, have people, astrologers, been able to communicate all over the planet Earth at the same time with the internet and Facebook and texting and messaging. It's amazing that I will be in my house. I'll be in New York, or I'll be in Paris, or I'll be in San Diego. And a friend from Australia will text me a thought she has, and we will get into a mind-the-phone kind of conversation about some astrology thing. That shows the linking of the astrological mind that has never taken place on the earth before. The same is true in science. The same is true in every field. That you can link with other similar minds all over the planet instantaneously. That could never happen before. So intelligence is expanding and consciousness is growing. Something is happening in the world, as well as the UFO experience, that cannot be denied any longer. And it doesn't involve everyone, because not everybody wants to talk finance. Not everybody wants to talk sex. Not everybody wants to talk astrology. So it happens at different levels for different people. But society is expanding at an enormous rate. And the UFO experience is among the things that people are opening up to. There's no escape from it.
Yeah. So, and the whole UFO discussion, alien discussion, is one of the things that is evolving.
I think so. You know, where do they, I mean, if there are such things, where are they coming from? How did they get here? In the last, I would say, 10 to 20 years, I remember when I first came to New York from France, you know, a long time ago, there was never any talk of time travel. It was impossible. It was impossible to imagine going to a star that's, you know, a planet that's 10 light years away or 20 light years away. Now you read something in scientific journals with the black holes and the passageways, whatever you call them, what do you call that? You know, the, You know, the going through the wormhole. So those things have now stopped being science fiction, and serious investigators are looking into the possibility of such things existing in the future.
Right.
So, and travel, interstellar travel is not impossible, but human beings will never be able to do it until we are really partly cybernetic, because the human body cannot live outside the sun's realm. The sun controls the heart and the whole metabolism, and so we would have to be partly cybernetic or send robots, but interstellar travel is probably very possible and discussed among scientists today as a great possibility in the future. If we can do it, so could somebody else.
Right. And they must already have. I mean, just probabilistically.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, Stephen Hawking, probably the greatest mind on the planet, right? Stephen Hawking, except for George Bush, but Stephen Hawking said he is not in favor of SETI. You know, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, you know that project? Do you remember when I had that on my computer? You could have it at home. Do you remember that?
Right.
I had SETI at home, which now they don't do because SETI lost its funding. But you could sign up, which I did, and your computer, it was your home page. It was your background page. And it was always moving, because it was searching. And you had to promise them that if you got a real signal, you would contact them before the media. It was fun. And it was free. And I took up a lot of space. Remember when I had that? But Stephen Hawking is against it. And he says it's looking for trouble because a further advanced civilization contacting a less advanced invariably wipes out the less advanced culture.
Based on our human experience?
Exactly. Yeah. When you think of the Native Americans and you think of any kind of explorers, if they were more sophisticated, they did dominate and make submissive the people that they contacted. So Stephen Hawking is not a big favor of SETI. So that gave me pause. It was interesting because we have these ideas of the day the Earth stood still and benevolent wise aliens, and David Jacobs didn't think so at all. He didn't like it at all. John Mack thought they were really here and they were going to tell us some spiritual truth. But I never went along with that after he changed toward that, because you look at the world, it is not getting any better, no matter who is whispering in your ear. Some people are getting better. But I thought that he was being naive about that. But, you know, he was a serious investigator.
I'm leaving the place I'm at, and I got a little distracted, but you said some people are getting better at what?
Some people are evolving. I mean, even the conversation we're having could have happened, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago. So people's
right.
consciousness is expanding. There's no question about it. But not everybody at once. So I'm not so sure that aliens coming here for first contact, and I don't know about this Ancient Aliens TV show, because there's a crazy-looking guy with big, tall hair, and he believes that everything happened before, you know, everything was alien, invented, the pyramids, the Parthenon, but, you know, I don't know about any of that, but whoever has come here, for whatever reason, has not presented themselves to the masses. And it's probably better. I know a guy. You didn't meet this guy. He's a cab driver. And I can't really tell too much of his story. Well, I guess I can, because he has told no one this. Because he's just a regular city cab driver. And he told me that one, just a regular guy, right? A regular person who has no interest in this stuff. But one day he was at my house. There was a lot of people, and he and I were sitting outside. And we got onto the subject. And he told me something he'd never told anybody else. He said that one night he picked up a fare. And the guy wanted to drive out to the desert. And so my friend, I won't say his name, he said, well, where are we going out in the desert? He said, just go out this, you know, so-and-so. So this, and I will get out when I reach my destination. So he drives out again. All the time he's driving away from the city toward the desert, the guy is talking about the earth and what we're doing to it and that we need to be evolved and all this kind of like sort of hippie stuff, right? So, but he was polite, and he was mildly interested
which,
in it. But
which is now much more of a possible conversation than it used to be, too, though, probably.
Yeah, right, exactly. But it was kind of, like, weird, and when it came time, he paid him a lot of money. And my friend said, no, it isn't that much. And the guy didn't understand the money. He said, well, just take this, because I don't need it. And so he lets the guy out in the middle of nowhere. Okay? This is the weird part. He lets the guy out in the middle of nowhere, and he drives up a little, you know, about 100, 200 feet so he can turn around, right? When he turns around and comes back down the road, he doesn't see a guy. He sees a kind of large reptile. This is what he tells me.
A large reptile, he says.
A large reptile where the guy had been. So I accepted. Listen, I don't know any more than that, and I don't know if I know the guy's not kooky, and it's not a reason to make up the story. I even barely can accept it myself now, but that's, I'm telling you what somebody told me. He said it was a two-legged reptile-looking face, and it was the guy, because there was no trace of the guy, and it was only about 3 minutes. So, hey. Do I know if that happened? I don't know. I just know that people have experiences that they believe happened to them. Some of these things are illusions, and some cannot be discounted as mere illusions, because I know of certain situations that cannot be discounted. Why it happened and why they're here and why these visitations happened and what the motive is, I don't know.
Okay. Are they reptilian looking like, or are they those
real looking ones? Oh, you mean the little grays? Hey.
Yeah.
Imagine what would happen if aliens.
Or is it like Men in Black, where you have like all the different.
If aliens came down here and they didn't know anything about the, you know, the life forms here. And they saw a 6'8" Norwegian standing next to a 4'1" Chinese lady next to an anteater and a bear. There are all kinds of life forms. I saw a great documentary once about what aliens would really look like. It was so imaginative because we anthropomorphize them all. It was fantastic. Some of these aliens like ate through their feet, and you know, as they walked, they were nourished. I mean, it was so phenomenal to see the various kinds of life forms that exist or could exist. So we have no imagination. We can't take it in how many kinds of life have evolved, what they look like. I believe that life, if you have a life form that evolved on a binary system, you know, two stars, mm-hmm. I think that they might all be identical twins, that they would all, there would always be two of everybody. That's just, you know, one crazy theory I have. There's no way that we can imagine the roads of evolution of human, of intelligence in a physical form. There's no way. Gene Roddenberry, I don't even believe he came from this planet. He was a person who was able, as you well know, to imagine things that are now already obsolete.
Right.
So he understood that there were different kinds of aliens. That they were, some of them were well-intentioned, some of them were not evolved, some of them were seductive and beautiful, some of them were not even corporeal. That's all Gene Roddenberry stuff. You know, and whether he took his stuff from Ray Bradbury and Isaac Asimov, as some people believe, maybe he took some of those ideas, but he manifested for reality during the Uranus-Pluto conjunction of the 60s. He manifested something in human terms that is slowly becoming true.
In human terms? You mean like a show that we could watch?
Yeah. I mean, something that was popular. Do you know that Bill Shatner, who saw himself as a budding Shakespearean actor, he was a serious guy. No matter what anybody thinks of him, he really saw himself as a serious actor. When he got this job, they told him, hey, take the job. No one's ever going to see this. Can you imagine that? And
right.
And the show has influenced the direction of physics. There's a book called The Physics of Star Trek. I forget his Japanese name. Forgive me. It's not Michio Kushi. I damn it, I always forget his name. He's a brilliant
Kaku.
Young. Yeah, I think it is. And he wrote The Physics of Star Trek. Now he republished it as The Physics of the Impossible, because probably the only people who read it were the Star Trek fiends. But it was interesting about what he believes is possible and what he believes cannot be done with our current knowledge of physics. Like beaming people around. But Star Trek, as a commercial television show, which really wasn't even that popular, has influenced young minds to go into physics and study it. And Bill Shatner was told, yeah, take the job. Leonard Nimoy was, I think, driving a cab. I think he was. And they said, take the job. Your wife's pregnant. You got to have a job. They took a job that was something that was silly to them. And that's what imagination is. And that's why we have our kids believe in Santa Claus. Because, not because it's religious or foolish myth, but because children who have an imagination and let it run free when they're younger, They develop greater imaginations when they're older. We just did something here that was so wild. Can I tell this to you? It's not on the same subject.
Yeah.
There's two little kids that live upstairs in my building in New York, and one, he's 7 years old, and she's four. I ran into them on the street, and Christmas was coming, and I said, you know, my cousin is married to one of the elves in North Pole. I just said it off the top of my head. So maybe we could get Santa Claus to visit. So the little boy said, "That's not true." I said, "I'll show you." "Yes, it is." Simultaneously and coincidentally, a very good friend of mine who used to work for me has now moved to the above the Arctic Circle. She fell in love with a rancher who raises reindeer. And she put a sign around the reindeer's neck and sent it to the kid saying, "Merry Christmas to Teo and, Sky," or the little girl's name is, "from Santa Claus and the reindeer." And she sent it to the kid. And then when we had Santa Claus in my house that night, and the kids were like amazed. Because Santa said, "Then did you get my picture that I sent you?" So it was such a fantastic moment. And it was sitting by my fireplace, so the kids thought he came down the fireplace. It was such a magical moment. So the little boy says to Santa Claus, "Which reindeer was that you sent us?" So my friend who dressed up as Santa Claus said, "That was Blitzen." And the little boy says, "I knew it! I knew it! I told my mom that was Blitzen." It was the best Christmas night. And that's why it's important for kids to be able to believe these fantasy stories and the cartoons that they see. It doesn't harm them. It shows them that imagination is possible. And that's what makes physics and astronomy and astrology, it makes them all possible because people open their minds to the possibility that we are connected. We're connected in a vast way we can only begin to understand. Not only are we connected to the planets and stars directly by our behavior and do we echo what is happening in the heavens, but we're connected to the intelligence that reigns throughout the galaxy and all the galaxies. There is an intelligence that runs through everything. And people and beings and animals, everything is connected in a way that they have only begun to understand.
Mm-hmm. What a good, that could be a closing thought, even.
Oh, yeah. I think that in the next 200 to 300 years, communication between animals and humans will be in places that we could not even imagine now. That's what's beginning to develop. A communication between humans, men and women, and all the animals that surround them. You know, I have a story. People don't believe this happened to me, but it did. One time I was in San Francisco. I was working there. And I was waiting to work at night. I was in the swimming pool in the hotel. And I was all by myself. It was a morning, a weekday morning. And a bumblebee landed in the water, and it got stuck in the water.
What's it?
It's a bumblebee, some kind of bee. And its wings got all wet, and it couldn't get out of the water. And I went over to the thing, and I said, "I'm going to take you out of here, and I'm going to fix your wings, but you better not sting me." So I picked it up in the palm of my hand, and I put it on the side of the pool, and I pulled its little wings open, you know, because it was stuck to the body. Mm-hmm. I pulled one wing and then the other, and it just sat there. It didn't do anything. And when I was finished, it flew away. That's my good story for the night.
And they do communicate. And, you know, they have a developed language.
Every animal has a language. Every animal has a language.
And it's sometimes
when I'm in a country, if you know the language, sometimes I listen to birds. I was in Costa Rica on vacation in June. And I was in the jungle, deep in the Costa Rican jungle. And I woke up one morning, and you hear the monkeys all night long talking to each other. But as the morning comes, the birds and the parrots and all the tropical birds start talking. And although you don't know what they're saying, you know that conversations are going on. You know, like, "Hey, who's a jerk from New York?"
Well, I mean, I don't know if they get that specific, but yeah.
No, they don't. No, they don't. Who's the sexy guy from New York?
Yeah, they might say.
So that's what you're probably saying. Anyway, that's about all I can tell you on the subject.
Well, thank you, Mike. That was the best one yet for Cult Studs, I think.
Well, good.
Aliens. Yeah.
Okay, great. So I'm glad it was good, and
no,
we shall definitely talk. We'll talk again whenever you need to.
Okay. I'll text you.
All right. See you soon.
Okay. See ya.
Bye.